the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, it's no surprise the cost of college has been going up just about every single year, and as a result, to pay for that college, a lot of debt is being amassed. In fact, the figure has amounted to over $1.5 trillion. But what if there was a way to make college less expensive? In other words, what if you were saving and it could be tax-free? Joining me on the program is Mark Kantoritz. He's a specialist on college aid and financing. Mark, you and I were discussing before we went on the air, and I wonder if we might just pick up on that. If you've been a listener to this program, you know that, for example, there are several vehicles that the government provides that can aid you in saving, whether it's for retirement, for your health, or college, and make what you save tax-free. There's health savings accounts. If you use to pay for health-related expenses, it's tax-free. Then there's the Roth IRA. Whether you contribute to one or convert to one, if used for retirement, it is tax-free. And then there's the 529 plans, which we're going to discuss today, which are saving for college or tax-free. Mark, why don't they just provide one vehicle? Because as you and I were talking about, if you use the wrong one, you can disqualify yourself for college aid and just make this whole thing simple instead of having three different tax-free accounts.
Yeah, it would make it a lot simpler. You can think maybe they would have two, one's a defined benefit and the other is a defined contribution plan. Like in college savings, we have three different major plans. We have 529 college savings plans, we have prepaid tuition plans, and we have Coverdell Education Savings Account. So even if you want to save for college, you have to choose. Now, one of the problems with integrating everything right now is, let's suppose that you save in a Roth IRA and you want to use that money to pay for college. Well, even if you take a tax-free distribution, a return of contributions from that Roth IRA, it's going to count as income on your financial aid application forms, as untaxed income, and that's going to reduce your eligibility for need-based financial aid. So how you save has an impact not just on how much you save and its tax status, but also on how much financial aid you're going to qualify for years down the road.
Since we're talking about financing college today, let's just stick with the 529 plan. Why don't you give our listeners the basics of a 529 plan, what it is, and then we'll start getting into the details so they know what to do.
A 529 plan is a vehicle for saving for college that has both tax advantages and financial aid advantages. You contribute money that's after-tax dollars. This money earns a return on investment that is tax deferred. And if you use the earnings and the contributions from a 529 plan to pay for qualified higher education expenses, it's entirely tax free. An additional benefit of 529 plans as compared to, say, a Roth IRA is that there are 35 states, including the District of Columbia, that offer a state income tax deduction or tax credit on your contributions to the state's plan. In six states, it's to any state's plan. And so that gives you an additional tax advantage at the state level that isn't available on retirement savings.
So you can get a tax deduction for doing that. And in some states where they have high income tax rates, that can be a big advantage for parents. Mark, if you were to, let's say, summarize and say, what are the main benefits of a 529 plan and just lay them out from 1 to 5 or 1 to 7, what would those benefits be?
Well, they are a tax advantage way of saving for college. They are treated more favorably when it comes to financial aid. If you have money in a parent-owned 529 plan or a child-owned 529 plan, it is treated as though it were a parent asset on the federal student aid application form, and that's more favorable than treating it as a student asset. Student assets reduce aid eligibility by 20% of the asset value, whereas parent assets are assessed on a bracketed scale with a worst-case highest bracket of 5.64%. then oftentimes there are the state tax advantages in many states. Also, 529 plans make it very easy to save. I mean, you can set up an automatic monthly transfer from your bank account to the 529 plan. Many of the plans offer employer deductions as a way to contribute. So they make it really easy to save. I mean, your monthly contribution can be as low as $25 a month, though it's ideal to save more. And these 529 plans also have built-in limitations of the choices, because for a long-term savings, you really don't need to save in individual stocks. So within the 529 plans, they usually have an all-stock fund, like an S&P 500, they have a bond fund, and they have these age-based asset allocations that move from an aggressive mix of investments when the child is young to a more conservative mix as the college years approach.
Mark, are those very much like what we call the target funds that are used in retirement?
Yes, absolutely. It's the investment glide path and gradually shifts to a more conservative mix of investments. When the child's young, if you happen to lose money, you don't have as much money invested in the 529 plan, and you have 17 years potentially to recover from those losses. But when college is just a few years away, you don't have as much time and you're counting on that money more. And so you need to have more of that money invested in options where there is no risk of loss. So that's very much like a target date fund, except target date funds for retirement may have a 40-year horizon, depending on when you started, whereas with an age-based asset allocation for a 529 plan, it's a 17-year horizon. And about two-thirds of families use age-based asset allocation.
When you take a look at a 529 plan, are there variations? In other words, are certain plans better than the other, or are they all generic and all the same?
Well, there are differences. First of all, there are two main types of 529 plans. There's direct sold, where you're investing directly through the state, and advisor sold, where you choose your financial advisor to manage it for you. And the financial advisor ones tend to have active management. They may have a little bit higher return on investment, but they also have higher fees. And you can't tell necessarily up front whether your net return on investment will be better with a direct sold version with the lower fees or an advisor sold version with the higher fees but higher returns. The website savingforcollege.com has a lot of data that shows you what your net return on investment will be. And it's a mix. I mean, some state plans are better than others. Some direct sold versions are better than advisor sold versions. And some advisor sold versions are better than the direct sold versions.
So as you look at these, one thing that comes up is, let's say I have two children and we have a 529 plan for one child, another one, we have a separate one. They're different ages and maybe there's differences in terms of where they want to go to school. Let's say one child, I don't spend as much on education. They go to a junior college, they go to a state college, and when they graduate, there's money left over in their plan. What are the options available to me? In other words, can I transfer it to my other child's plan? Can I transfer it? Or could I use it, for example, let's say I want to go back to school and upgrade my education. Can I do that? What are the options?
There are several options for when a child has leftover money, which is very rare these days because college costs a lot. One is to change the beneficiary from that child to a relative of that child. That can be a sibling, that can be a parent. You may have to worry a little bit about generation skipping taxes if you change it from the child to the parent or a grandchild. But you could use the money for graduate school or just keep it around in case that child wants to use it for their own children. Most often, people change the beneficiary to be a sibling. 529 plans, you could always take a non-qualified distribution. Now, you'd say there's going to be taxes paid on that distribution, and there's a 10% tax penalty in some circumstances. But the taxes are at the beneficiary's rate, and they're only on the earnings portion of the distribution. The same thing for the 10% tax penalty. And depending on the state that you're in, that state income tax deduction that you claimed when you first contributed the money may actually compensate for that 10% tax penalty. Because even though there may be recapture of that state income tax deduction, you had the use of that deduction, the money that the savings on your taxes, you contributed that to the 529 plan. You had the use of that money, and so you get to keep the earnings on that, and that compensates for the 10% tax penalty. So in a way, you are no worse off than if you had saved the money in a taxable account.
I guess another question that comes to mind, I know when parents or students are applying for financial aid to get into a college, they look at income of the parents or maybe even assets of the child. How does a 529 plan, in other words, let's say, for example, that a child is born, the parents start immediately putting money away in that child's account, maybe the grandparents add on birthdays, etc. So by the time the child gets to age 18, there's a substantial amount of money in there. Let's say there's $50,000, $100,000, whatever the figure is. How does that impact financial aid, if at all?
Under current law, money in a 529 plan is an asset. And it gets reported depending on who the account owner is. So if it's the child or that child's parent who is the account owner, it's reported as though it's a parent asset. If it's owned by a grandparent, it's not reported as an asset, but distributions count as untaxed income to that child. So the most favorable treatment is treating it as the asset of the parent. So there is a penalty, in a sense, for saving, but it's a really small penalty. So if you saved in a parent-owned 529 plan, let's say you saved $10,000 total, including the earnings, worst-case scenario, it's going to reduce your need-based aid eligibility by $564. In most cases, it'll be less, which still leaves you with $9,436 to pay for college costs. That can help you choose a more expensive college than you otherwise would have chosen because you now have the ability to afford a more expensive college, or you'll go to the same college you were planning on before, but you're going to reduce your debt because every dollar you save is about a dollar less you're going to have to borrow. And even if it's very late in the game, it is beneficial to save because that avoids the debt. And every dollar you borrow will cost about $2 by the time you pay back that debt. In addition, with these state income tax deductions, depending on the marginal tax rate in the state, that can function like a discount on tuition. You contribute money to the 529 plan, you get that state income tax deduction, and then you take a distribution to pay for college costs. So you've effectively, that state income tax deduction is a discount on tuition. Now, some of the states, it's contributions net of distributions. So if you, within 1 year, contribute the money and then immediately take it out, you're not getting that state income tax deduction. But in other states, it's just whatever your contributions were. And even if they say, well, you have to keep the money in the plan for a year, and you could always contribute on December 31st and then take the distribution on January 1st and therefore get that state income tax deduction. You just have to do it in even numbered years or odd numbered years so that you're not netting out the benefit. So half as frequent.
Let's take another scenario. Let's suppose I'm using a 529 plan. I'm saving for junior. The idea is junior's going to go to state school, but when he gets to college age, he changes that to get the education he wants. He wants to go to, let's say, a private college or a state school in another state. Does that impact the 529 plan or the type of plan that you have?
It doesn't directly affect the plan or the type of plan. What it does is it has an impact on your college savings goals because a out-of-state public college is more expensive than an in-state public college, and a private college tends to be more expensive than an out-of-state public college on average. When you're trying to figure out how much you need to save for this college that's going to cost a lot more, right, three times as much 17 years in the future, I recommend using the one-third rule. Like any major life cycle expense, when you pay for college, you're going to be spreading out that cost over time. Some of it is going to come from savings, which is past income. Some will come from current income at the time the child is in college, and some will come from future income in the form of loans. So as a very rough cut, you could say, well, let's do a third, a third, a third from each of the types. And then given that college costs go up by about a factor of three over a 17-year period, and three times a third is one, that suggests that your college savings goal should be the full cost of a college education, all 4 years if it's a four-year institution or 2 years if it's a community college, the year the child was born. Now, you may not be able to predict the precise college that that child's going to. I know every parent thinks their child is going to Harvard, but I mean, the acceptance rate at Harvard is in the single digits. But you might be able to predict the type of college, an in-state public college, an out-of-state public college, or a private nonprofit college. And for a child born this year, based on the current cost of each of those types of colleges, the amount you should save per month in order to reach one-third of that future college cost is $250 a month for an in-state public college, $400 a month for an out-of-state public college, and $500 a month for a private college. Now, if you're not able to do that amount, and that may be too much, you can get started lower. The minimum contribution in many states' plans are $25 a month. A few have $50 a month. And as you progress, you can maybe increase that amount. You get a raise at work, you contribute a higher amount each month. If you get a big bonus or an income tax refund or an inheritance, you could devote a substantial portion of that to college costs. Or when your child no longer needs diapers, which can be really expensive, you take the money that you were previously spending on diapers or daycare, and you redirect it towards the 529 plan.
You know, something else that a lot of grandparents will sometimes want to make a gift to their grandson or granddaughter for college education. Are there any gift tax or estate tax ramifications of money contributed, let's say, by grandparents to a 529 plan for their grandchildren?
There are. So the annual gift tax exclusion in 2018 is $15,000. And if grandma and grandpa give as a couple, they can contribute as much as twice that to each of their grandchildren. And if they want to give more than that, normally they would potentially be using up part of their lifetime gift tax exclusion or having to pay gift taxes on it. But 529 plans have a special feature called five-year gift tax averaging. So if you give more than that $15,000 or $30,000 annual gift tax exclusion, it's treated as though it were made ratably over a five-year period, the current year plus 4 years. So you're using up your annual gift tax exclusion for a five-year period, but that lets you make a lump sum contribution for one individual to each grandchild. It would be $75,000. If they give as a couple, it's $150,000, and there would be no gift tax implications because it's being given effectively over a five-year period. Now, if, God forbid, the grandparent dies in the middle of that five-year period, it's treated as ratably being removed from their estate. So if they die in year three, then three of the 5 years' worth of contributions aren't in their estate. The remaining two are. But it is very good for estate planning purposes, and sometimes the grandparents just want to do it without having to worry about what will happen in a few years. They just set it up and they leave a legacy for their grandchildren, and they're very happy that they've done this. It's important, though, that it be a contribution to a child-owned or a parent-owned 529 plan as opposed to a grandparent-owned 529 plan, because the impact on financial aid eligibility is so much harsher if a 529 plan is not reported as an asset on the financial aid application forms.
You just mentioned the ability to give several years in advance. I had a wealthy client who did just that when their grandson got accepted to a great private school. Between he and his wife, they put a substantial amount, which almost pays for two-thirds of the college education. So a great idea. I want to move on to something else. Let's say that you're starting a 529 plan. Let's say your wife gives birth to a child. You want to start saving. What about choosing investments? What are the choices? What are the best things to do? I would suspect, Mark, you're going to say that, look, if your child is just born, you have 18 years to save, and we know over 18 years, probably putting the money in a S&P index fund is probably a good place to start, because you can ride the ups and downs of the market. If there's a bear market next year, who cares when you have 18 years to save for college?
Right, so 529 plans usually have an S&P 500 or a total stock market fund. Now, investing in equities is higher return, but it's also higher risk. And during any 17-year period, there is going to be a correction at least three times in the stock market as a whole. So you can't time for that. You can't prevent the risk, but you can use an age-based asset allocation to adjust for the risk. So that starts off with maybe 100% in stocks or 80% in stocks, and then gradually reduces that percentage in the S&P 500 fund until it bottoms out at 20 or 30% of the investment in S&P 500, and the rest in investments like bank CDs, which you don't have a risk of loss of the principal. And there aren't that many choices within the 529 plan. You can choose the individual funds from a menu of a few dozen funds or an age-based asset allocation. And over a 17-year period, very few mutual funds will beat the S&P 500 at that level of risk. And if you adjust for the risk, very few will beat an age-based asset allocation. Now, I've done some research. I published a paper on this earlier this year, where there may be some benefit of delaying the onset of an age-based asset allocation. The idea is that the shifting away from risky investments in the typical age-based asset allocation may occur too quickly. So you want to shift away from risky investments when college is just a few years away, but before then, maybe you can sustain a higher risk mix for a few more years. Maybe you start when the child's born, and then you switch from high risk mix of investments to an age-based asset allocation when the child enters kindergarten or first grade. And that has the equivalent impact of increasing the average annual return on investment by half a percentage point. And if you delay it by 10 years, it's one percentage point increase, and it actually can potentially reduce the risk. You shouldn't delay the onset by more than 10 years, because at that point, the risk rises so much that it wipes out the potential gains of sustaining a higher percentage invested in stocks.
A couple other things that come to mind. I know a lot of states, for example, have their 529 plans. Are there any private colleges, I guess, that have something similar? I would think not, because how do you know? I mean, if, let's say, Harvard was to have a 529 plan, how do you know your kid's going to get into Harvard? So is there anything, just out of curiosity, on the private college side similar to what we see at the state level?
You can invest in any state's 529 plan. Obviously, in some states, you won't get that state's income tax deduction for contributions to an out-of-state plan, but you can invest in any state's plan, and all states except for Washington State have their own 529 plan. Washington State is just a prepaid tuition plan, but they are adding a 529 plan later this year, so it'll soon be all states. In addition to these state-based plans, there is also an independent 529 plan that is aimed at a group of private colleges. And you can use any 529 plan to pay for any college. So you don't have to worry that you're investing in one state's plan, your child goes to college in a different state. You can still use that money for that different state. You're not restricted for the 529 college savings plans to investing in the state where your child's going to go to college.
So the idea that, let's say I'm in a state, they have a 529 plan, I get a tax deduction for it, so I'm contributing to this plan, but in the end, it turns out Junior gets accepted in a A-rated private school in that state, it's not going to affect that plan at all?
It's not going to affect it. You can use qualified higher education expenses, are not restricted to any particular type of college other than the college must be eligible for federal student aid. So that may restrict your use if the child decides to go to college overseas, though there are a couple hundred international colleges that are eligible for Title IV federal student aid, just the loans, but that's enough for you to be able to use the 529 plan money to pay for that college like Oxford or Cambridge or the University of North South Wales in Australia. Those are all listed as eligible for federal student aid, and therefore you can use the 529 plan money to send your child there. But if the college is accredited in the U.S. and has signed the program participation agreement with the U.S. Department of Education, then you can use 529 plan money for that college. And it's very easy to check whether a college is eligible. You just check whether they have a federal school code. And there's some online databases on U.S. Department of Education websites that you could look that information up.
So, in summary, there are so many benefits to 529 plans. Mark, what would you recommend an individual or, let's say, a grandparent that's considering a 529 plan for a child or grandchild, getting the information, working with an advisor? What do you recommend?
Well, I recommend that you start just becoming familiar with it. The reason why not as many people use 529 plans as you might expect is they're just not aware of the details. There are a couple websites out there that have a lot of really good information about them. I mentioned savingforcollege.com. The also Morningstar.com has ratings of the 529 plans, as does savingforcollege.com. There's a good introduction to 529 plans on savingforcollege.com that gets you through the basics, and you can then find links to all the 529 plans. There's even enroll now buttons. And the key is to just get started, because the sooner you start saving, the more time there will be for your earnings to compound. And your greatest asset is really time. In fact, I personally started saving for my own children's college educations before they were born.
Wow. Mark, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more information, you write a lot and cover this material. Why don't you give out your website, if you would?
Right. So I'm publisher now of savingforcollege.com. I also have a website called studentaidpolicy.com. That paper that I mentioned about delayed onset of switching into an age-based asset allocation appears on that website, as well as a lot of policy analysis papers about things like student loans, saving for college, scholarships, everything and anything.
Well, listen, Mark, as always, it's a pleasure having you back on the program, and thanks for all the great input and information on 529 plans. All the best to you, sir. I hope to talk to you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, that concludes my interview with Mark Kantorowicz. And once again, if you are a parent or maybe you're a grandparent and you're thinking of maybe making a gift to a grandchild, or you're a parent, you just had a child and you're thinking about saving for college, folks, you really need to look into a 529 plan. Why not save for college and have any gains, interest, dividends, all tax-free when it goes to save for college? There are so many vehicles out there as we began that conversation. Saving for college, tax-free. Saving for medical care, tax-free. Saving for retirement, tax-free. These are plans the government puts in place to encourage you to do so. And it's amazing how many people neglect to use them and end up paying more taxes than they should. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.